So, today we'll be discussing EdExcel's history GCSE topic, Spain in the New World, 1490 to 1555. My name is Ella Wood, and I'm here with...
Grace Bannister,
Gemma Little,
Katie Nightingale,
and Katie Hoy.
We're second-year students at the University of York, and I've created this podcast as part of a public history project with the Historical Association, aiming to diversify the school curriculum and draw attention to topics which have a tendency to be neglected.
When doing research on the Young Voices student feedback on the curriculum, something that we noticed was the interests of students and what history they would like to focus more on.
Secondary school students mentioned an interest in non-European history, in addition to colonial legacies and women's histories. There was also a significant desire for more interactive lessons and content, which we have attempted to consider.
In observing the revision guide for Spain and the New World, we noticed a clear lack of information on women other than Queen Isabella. The word women only came up 5 times, and when it did, it painted women entirely as victims of Spanish colonialism and conquest. It is for these reasons that this podcast will centre around discussing the role of Indigenous women in Spain and the New World from 1490 to 1555, and extracting them from the victim narrative to show how impactful they really were.
However, this concept is also transferable to other topics. Recognising the role of women and the framing of historically oppressed people is important in many historical contexts.
This is why we've chosen to centre this podcast around the case study of La Malinche, an Indigenous enslaved woman whose linguistic skills proved vital for Spanish negotiations. She's particularly interesting due to her being heavily demonised for betraying her people by helping the Spanish establish control in the region through her negotiations and being a double agent for the Spanish.
We will also be centering our discussion on a particular primary source from the Lienzo di Tlaxcala. It gives a perfect center point to surround our discussion of La Malinche and her role in the Spanish conquest.
So, this needs to be contextualized within wider scholarly debate and historiography. Grace, do you want to start by sharing some of your findings on the trends in historiography?
Yes, firstly, it's really important to note the evolution of study on this topic and how students have come to be taught what they are taught today.
Recognizing history as a process and as something that changes and continues to change is particularly valuable in this debate.
To expand on this, within our topic, we're going to focus on trends in historiography rather than specific figures, which means our topic will be more applicable to other studies of interest. If you do want to know more about specific thinkers, please refer to our further reading list.
Sounds great. How will you expand on this?
Well, it's important to mention that comparative women's history in relation to Spanish America has been increasingly studied in recent decades, particularly in terms of a focus on agency.
This is particularly due to people talking about resistance in a broader sense. Terms such as malicious compliance and passive resistance are more common today and completely restructure historians' views on Indigenous women.
While historiography in the 1980s and 1990s tended to focus on active Indigenous resistance to colonial rule, more recent work has demonstrated the importance of also recognising accommodation and more passive forms of resistance. This is definitely something we will focus on in this podcast through the case study of La Malinche.
What is the modern relevance of this topic? How has it evolved into what historians study today?
There has been a very recent renewal and interest in this topic, demonstrating the ways in which historiography is changing even today. Multiple mediums are used to explore the role of Indigenous women, including a 2022 exhibition of interpretations of La Malinche in a number of US museums, including the Denver Art Museum. This exhibition is called Traitor Survivor Icon, The Legacy of La Malinche.
Speaking of La Malinche, Cordelia Candelaria poses a question in her article, La Malinche Feminist Prototype. To quote her, was she a traitor to her people? Was she a treasonous puppet of the Spaniards? Should she be praised or condemned? I know we mentioned her earlier, but could you expand more on the details of who she was and her life in general?
Yes, so to provide further context, she was one of the 12 Indigenous women given to Hernán Cortés in 1519. She used her ability to speak and translate multiple languages to become vital in negotiations between the Spanish and the Aztecs. Her life has been filtered through a predominantly male lens, as the most complete source for information we have about La Malinche is Bernal Díaz del Castillo, a soldier under Cortés. Cortés makes reference to her in some of his letters back to Spain, though only calls her by her name once. La Malinche is only remembered through a Spanish male perspective, and the nature of Aztec history, particularly oral, doesn't allow for any nuance to her story.
She has been very controversial in Mexican culture for betraying her people by helping establish Spanish rule in Mexico, with Malinchista being used as a popular insult there. This means to prefer a foreign culture over one's own.
However, this is rather a one-sided perspective. It fails to see that she was enslaved and had to work within the boundary she was given. She used her knowledge of native languages to help Cortez, but then also quickly learned Spanish so that she could be his sole translator. This means that Cortez was entirely reliant on her and also demonstrates that she was not gaining power out of greed, but out of survival and slavery, trying to help herself and other indigenous people.
She gained so much influence that Cortez said that second to God, she was the biggest factor in his success, which was high praise given his Catholicism. Cortez was sometimes even referred to as El Malinche after her, perhaps suggesting her role in his subsequent interpretation and legacy.
How does this link to our podcast? How does the case study of La Malinche remove women from the victim narrative that they are so often pigeonholed into?
Great question. La Malinche is given agency by being considered a villain with power and autonomy over her decisions instead of being a passive victim with no active resistance. So while she is now demonised, this does represent and link back to the changing trend of historiography and the evolution of resistance.
It's important to know that although this definitely shifts the narrative, La Malinche is still being pigeonholed just into a different way.
You're right. We've gone from viewing her as other Indigenous women from only being a victim to only a villain. This is a narrative particularly prevalent in pop culture.
She has been heavily demonised in pop culture, even in a 1982 cartoon called The Mysterious Cities of Gold. This follows the story of two children playing explorers. La Malinche is portrayed here as a villain, almost akin to one out of Scooby-Doo.
This podcast is aiming to do the opposite of this cartoon, to not simply simplify or sanitise sensitive topics for children, instead to portray La Malinche and other women throughout history as more complex, allowing them to transcend the victim-villain archetype entirely.
What I've learnt from this is that you must also consider her lack of agency. She was enslaved, after all.
She was. There was very limited opportunity for her to do much else, and in some situations, the only possible act of resistance would simply be to survive.
She's been further demonised for birthing Cortez's son, Martin, and is thus seen to be the mother of the mestizos, which was seen as an act of betrayal of her people. We'll now turn to examine the image we have. We've picked this as it showcases La Malinche's role in Spanish colonisation.
Would you like to explain this picture? We know listeners can't see it, so check the transcript or further reading for a better understanding.
Yes, this is an image from the New Mexico archives. On the left, the image depicts the Aztecs. Three are standing behind what appears to be the Aztec chief, as he is seated and in negotiations with Hernan Cortez, who is seated on the right. La Malinche is standing behind Cortez in negotiation with the Aztecs. The image is in a codex called the Lienzo de Tlaxcala and was one of three produced in the second half of the 16th century. It was given to Charles V, King of Spain, perhaps to demonstrate Spanish success in negotiations, which we know was much accredited to the role of La Malinche.
This image can tell us a lot about the way La Malinche was perceived. What's interesting is that both La Malinche and the king are in the same position, both pointing forward towards the Aztec natives that they are seemingly in negotiations with.
A simplified look at this would suggest that her position behind Cortez makes her appear sidelined and subservient. But we know she still must have some control as a result of her linguistic abilities and her role as translator. She was an invaluable asset to Cortez, and he would not have been able to negotiate without her.
She can be seen as using her skills to influence and have power over negotiations, evident in her demeanour as she points and directs alongside Cortez. Her position behind him is not repression, but easy access for him to hear her translations.
It's important to remember the simple nature of translation. It's so easy to manipulate and change the meaning of a sentence or phrase through the choice of tone or synonyms. The power she holds over negotiations due to this control over language, which Cortez does not have, cannot be overstated.
So, we can understand this image is instrumental in showing the way in which La Malinche was able to access power, therefore influencing Cortez and inserting herself into the public sphere as an invaluable instrument of communication.
Exactly. What's really important about this is the way La Malinche was presented in a source that was meant to show Spanish success. She was pivotal to Cortez's communication.
True. But she can't have been the only Indigenous woman who played a role in Spanish conquest and colonization. Why is she remembered and others aren't?
Well, we think it's likely that La Malinche gets remembered because she so easily falls into conventional storytelling archetypes. At multiple points in history, she has been depicted as either an immoral and dangerous seductress or a victim, with very little nuance in between.
Other Indigenous women's stories are less easily labelled as innocent or evil, and their roles in history do not fall into these archetypes. Hence, they don't get remembered as much.
An example of this is the story of Juan Ortiz and Eulalia. It is a 1557 story of a Spanish man captured by American Indians. And just before they decide to execute him, the chief's daughter, commonly known as a princess, and later in a 1908 rendition of the story, given the name Eulalie, bravely defies her tribe and pleads for her father to save the man's life.
Why does this story sound so familiar?
It's not surprising that it does. It probably reminds you of the story or the Disney film of Pocahontas, but actually the story of Eulalie came first and is theorised to have actually inspired John Smith's account of Pocahontas and her brave defiance in defence of the English.
But despite this, Eulalie barely gets remembered in history. The retellings of her story continually stress that she is widely unremembered. The 1908 retelling opening paragraph describes how, to quote, comparatively few, even among the educated of our country, have any knowledge of the story of Juan Ortiz, the young Spaniard, or the Indian princess Eulalie.
It's likely the reason for this is that it doesn't capture the public's imagination as well. With the Pocahontas story, it's easy to be romanticised and sanitised. She saves an English man from the American Indians, embraces colonialism, and marries him. Eulalie's story doesn't exactly allow for this.
In the original story, there is no mention of romance. She helps him escape and is never mentioned again. The 1876 retelling hints that she might have rescued him because she was attracted to him, but never goes beyond speculation. It is only in the 1908 retelling that it describes how Juan Ortiz confesses his love for her and asks for her to marry him. However, she doesn't agree to marry him and doesn't run away from her tribe. She may fit into a noble savage archetype, but never manages to go the full way, unlike women like La Malinche and Pocahontas.
So you're saying stories easily digestible and formulaic are more likely to be remembered in pop culture. That makes sense. But how do your findings link to wider debate and what that means for the development of the curriculum?
Whilst this research is primarily focused on Edexcel's Spain in the New World, 1490 to 1555, it is definitely something that can be transferable to other exam boards and specifications.
Exactly. The role of women is at risk of being forgotten in many different topics, and it is very common for them to be reduced to stereotypes. Therefore, the discussion we've had today is very relevant on a much wider scale of education, focusing on women who've been silenced throughout all moments in history.
Also, the aspect of re-evaluating people that were reduced to a victim narrative should be more widely considered. Having another look at the presentation of oppressed people helps give them nuance and agency in their role and decisions. It stops them being seen as passive participants in history.
So you think this is something that is really important for history teachers to teach children about?
Yeah, particularly because history is so important for teaching values. Both the concept of women as having power and influence and the ability of women to be good and bad under different circumstances means children are able to give credit to women where it is due. It is well known that history is important for empathy and representation.
Very true. Well done, guys. I think you've demonstrated the importance of highlighting women and how this can be transferred into education. This has been our podcast, focusing again on Edexcel's Spain in the New World, 1490 to 1555. We have a reading list of further information and our sources, particularly with the image we focused on. This has been Ella Wood, Gemma Little, Katie Nightingale, Grace Bannister, and Katie Howe. Thanks so much for listening, and we hope this research will be useful in furthering school education and broadening the GCSE curriculum.